The creature scrambled backward as the flames licked at its back. Wei jumped to his feet and ran around the beast, depositing small green crystals in a circle, before he stopped, dropped, and slapped the ground hard, muttering something. I stilled as the green crystals lit up from the inside, my fire curtain gone in a flash. Bright, greenish-white beams shot out from the gems, then became flexible and lashed around the gargoyle. The creature didn't know what to do, scared by my fire and blinded by the strange, flashing ropes that stretched over it in a net-like pattern. Wade got back up, casually dusting himself off, as the now incandescent green ropes tightened into a trap and knocked the gargoyle down, forcing it into submission. The creature struggled and growled, but whenever it tried to stand, the incandescent ropes burned into its thick skin, far worse and deeper than any of the fires that had been thrown at it earlier. Only then, as I managed to catch my breath, my knees and arms shaking from both physical exertion and shock, did perfectly reasonable questions start knocking the air out of my lungs. What was that trap? How did it work? How could light be bent like that? How come Wade could use fire the way he did? Did it come from those rings on his fingers? How did he know what a gargoyle was? Why had the creature tried to attack the guy? Where had it come from? Of the many darting through my head at this point, I figured I deserved answers to at least these questions. I shifted my focus to Wade, understanding right then and there that A, I wasn't the only one with peculiar abilities, and that B, he clearly had the answers I needed. Answers that I'd been looking for since I was 7 years old and first noticed how different I was from everybody else. Chapter 4. What is going on here? I asked, my voice trembling with a mixture of concern and confusion. On one hand, I felt a sense of relief in knowing that I wasn't the only one who could do what I did. After years of keeping my abilities to myself, out of fear of being labeled a freak or worse, locked in a cage and dissected in some government facility, it was oddly refreshing to see someone else as weird as me. On the other hand, this incident opened a whole new can of worms. One drenched in questions I'd stopped asking many years back. Given my crappy childhood, I was never naive enough to dream of some magical family waiting for me somewhere in a faraway land. My abilities didn't come with an instruction manual, so I had to do my best with trial and error. 5 minutes after he'd managed to subdue the gargoyle underneath that strange incandescent net, Wade didn't seem too interested in my presence. He circled the beast several times and took notes in a small pocket journal. He stopped, then looked up at me.
"I told you to keep him here," Wade muttered.
"Huh?" I frowned, then quickly remembered the guy we'd just basically rescued. I looked over my shoulder, watching the guy limp away.
"You! Stop!"
Wade called out, and raised his hand. The rings on his fingers lit up once more, this time blue, as he gestured to the guy to turn around and come back. I held my breath, as the man was compelled to do as he'd been asked. Judging by the horrified look on his face, he had no other choice. His body was no longer under his control.
What are you doing to me?
He mumbled, his lips trembling with fear.
Relax. I'm not going to hurt you, Wade replied,
then motioned for the guy to sit down, which he inadvertently did.
Just stay there until I get to you.
He then made a couple more notes in his pocket journal, while giving me the occasional glance. Was I being mentioned in there? What was this deal? Dude, seriously, what's happening here? I asked again, raising my voice. His gaze found mine, and suddenly I felt genuinely irritated. That was his emotion, not mine. I annoyed him. Really? I'm the annoying one in this scenario?
You're very impatient. Not a good sign, he said,
then put the journal back inside his jacket pocket.
He walked over to the Jeep with its bent hood, producing a set of keys from another pocket. He opened the trunk and pulled out a mason jar, narrowing his eyes as he looked at it for a couple of seconds. He shook his head, then took another larger jar out and walked back to the gargoyle, which had been forced to calm down, unable to free itself from the incandescent net. I took a couple of steps forward, getting closer so I could take a better look at the green crystals. They weren't fixed on the asphalt in any way, and yet they served as anchors for the luminescent ropes. No matter how hard the creature tried, the crystals didn't budge. This was one too many shades of weird, way past what I could do. "What are these?" I asked, pointing at the crystals. I figured I could start small, as far as my many questions for him were concerned. Not that he'd been particularly responsive to anything so far.
"Put this down there, by the gargoyle's head. Take the lid off," he replied, bringing the mason jar over, then handing it to me. "What do they look like to you?"
I glanced at the rescued guy for a second. He was still sitting on the edge of the road, trembling as he stared at us and muttering to himself. I couldn't hear him, but putting myself in his shoes, I imagined he was asking all the gods in the universe and beyond why he was stuck here with us. Poor guy. Wish I had an answer for you. "Crystals, I guess?" I shrugged, then placed the jar by the gargoyle's head and held on to the lid. The creature looked up at me, revealing its hideously huge fangs. It was difficult to properly quantify the amount of uneasiness I felt in its presence, but given its physical restraints, I took comfort in the fact that it couldn't hurt me anymore.
"You are correct."
Wade nodded, his green eyes measuring me from head to toe. His inquisitive expression made me feel way too self-conscious, but I could at least sense that his irritation was starting to subside. Instead, curiosity took over. He was trying to figure me out. Care to elaborate, at least? It's not every day that I bump into a freaking gargoyle and a dude shooting fire from his fingers, I retorted, resting my hands on my hips. The pain in my ankle reminded me that I'd sprained it earlier, and that I was still wearing a black cocktail dress, stilettos, and my grungy leather jacket on top. I probably looked like I'd just come out of a high-end thrift store. Nevertheless, I couldn't worry about my appearance, not with all the questions I had for this guy. Even out in the street, the air between us felt electrified, charged with intense energies that were well beyond my control. Whatever I'd felt inside the casino in his presence was back, making my skin tingle.
"They're called entrapment stones," he replied, then sighed and nodded at the jar. "And that's a monster holder.
For the monster." I pointed at the gargoyle, basically voicing the conclusion to myself.
"You're quick."
Wade purposely examined me again.
"Not bad for... what are you supposed to be? A barfly?"
Oh, the sarcasm, the arrogance. I could smack him. "A casino employee," I retorted, gritting my teeth.
"That's what they call you these days." "Okay. Now step back," he said. "I need to put this bad boy away."
"I take it this isn't your first rodeo," I noted dryly.
"Of course not. Although it is odd for this to happen in such a public space,"
Wade replied, concern drawing shadows between his eyebrows.
"Gargoyles are never this brazen."
I nodded slowly and moved back. Compliance seemed like a better tool to employ if I wanted any answers out of him. He raised his hands over the beast, his rings lighting up red this time. His lips moved as the gargoyle growled and twitched, then instantly disintegrated in a puff of black smoke. The incandescent net also vanished, as if the light simply went out, leaving behind 12 green crystals. A gasp left my throat as the jar glowed red, sucking the black smoke inside.
"Now put the lid on tight," he added.
I did as instructed, then picked up the jar, staring at its contents. This was getting weirder with each moment. How does this work? I mumbled, then watched Wade as he collected the crystals and stuffed them in his other jacket pocket.
"Gargoyles are, as you so eloquently put it, monsters," Wade replied. "However, they're not the regular fleshy monsters you read about in books. Judging by how confused you seem, I'm going to go ahead and assume you've never heard of witches, warlocks, or purges."
"Wait. Are you telling me that witches and warlocks are real?" I asked, suddenly understanding the magnitude of his statement. I'd heard the terms, of course, although mostly from books and movies. The thought that I might be one had crossed my mind, but with no specific literature to explain exactly how I was able to do the things I could do, it had stayed just that, a thought.
"You can't tell me you're surprised, based on your abilities."
He sighed, seemingly bored with my obtuseness. But he wasn't bored at all. The tingling sensation in my throat and limbs was excitement, a curiosity. Not just his, though. Some of it was mine. I wasn't alone in this.
"Not exactly. I just never had a term for it."
I shook my head slowly. "How is this possible?"
"That's a long story, and I strongly recommend that we clear this area before the rest of the casino employees and customers come out," Wade replied.
"Hold on," I said, stepping back before he could take the jar from my hands. "So what you did, what you do, it's all magic? Actual magic, like wands and all?"
"Give me that."
Wade snatched the jar back, then strode to his Jeep. I didn't leave his side, watching him put the item in a duffel bag inside the trunk and then walk over to the guy sitting on the other side of the narrow, dimly lit street.
"Yes, actual magic. No wands, though. This isn't a children's book. This is the real world."
"So what, you use rings? Did your witchy ancestors consider wands to be a fashion faux pas or what?" I shot back.
"Hold that thought,"
Wade replied, then shifted his focus to the guy, motioning for him to stand up. The guy was about as tall as Wade, but much thinner, though I was willing to bet he had sweated out about 10 pounds just from tonight's events. Wade snapped his fingers in front of the man's face as his rings lit up blue.
"You, what's your name?"
"Jamie,"
the guy replied absently, a blue glimmer blooming in his eyes.
"Jamie, what were you doing out here tonight?"
Wade asked. Jamie blinked slowly a couple of times, then responded,
"I had drinks with some friends. I was walking home."
"Okay, this is what happened, Jamie. You came out of the bar where you had drinks with some friends. You were walking home when two men tried to rob you. You don't remember their faces, but you got roughed up a little bit. You hit back and ran away. You're safe now. They're gone. There's nothing for you to be afraid of. You didn't see anything else. You didn't experience anything else. When you wake up tomorrow, tonight will seem like a distant memory, and you will be at peace. Everything will be okay, Jamie. Obliviscor memoriam."
Jamie's eyes shone bright blue for a second, then returned to his natural shade of brown. He took a deep breath, then rubbed his face as if just waking up from a deep sleep, while Wade put his hands behind his back, the light in his rings gone.
What happened?"
Jamie asked. The horror that had been blaring out of him and right into me was gone. Instead, there was confusion, with a tinge of shame, typical of the drunken man who'd lost his way. Whatever Wade had just done to him, it was a lot like hypnotic suggestion from what I could tell.
"I don't know, mate."
Wade shrugged, feigning disinterest.
"You must be drunk or something. Why don't you go home? You're freaking my girlfriend out."
"Huh?" I mumbled, barely catching his lie as Jamie stared at me.
"I'm so sorry."
Jamie frowned, then walked away, and vanished behind the corner into the main street.
"Your girlfriend?"
I glared at Wade, my cheeks on fire.
"Part of the job. We lie, we deceive,
We protect their ignorance at any cost, Wade replied, then turned back and walked over to his car.
Wait, we?
You didn't think it was just the two of us, did you?
Come on, man, you've got to give me something more than half answers and rhetorical questions, I exclaimed, and caught him by his arm. The muscles beneath the soft fabric of his jacket were rock hard, and I found it hard to let go, even when he stopped and turned around to face me again.
Obviously, I have no idea what I am, what you are, or why there was a gargoyle out in the middle of the freaking city hunting for dinner. You're the first person I've met who can do stuff.
He breathed out, his shoulders dropping, and looked at me for a while, then swiped through his phone.
Why did you hypnotize him? How did you hypnotize him?
I resumed my line of questioning.
Humans can't know who we are and what we can do. It'll put both us and them in danger, for reasons that cannot be explained in the parking lot of a casino, Wade replied bluntly. He's better off thinking he got mugged, believe me. I've got a cleanup crew to handle CCTV and other loose ends. As for the how part, here.
He took out a business card and handed it to me.
What's this?
I asked, turning it over to find his name, phone number, and organization beautifully written in swirly embossed golden lettering. Wade Crowley, San Diego Coven.
Coven? Seriously?
There are covens.
I like how you're able to answer your own questions if I let you think,
he said, and my throat burned the moment he raised his eyebrow again.
What's this?
I shot back, my teeth gritting. My patience had abandoned me completely.
Here's how it's going to go from here on out, he replied, all traces of sarcasm gone. You are a witch. I am a warlock. Magic, Harley, is real.
Wait, you know my name? I gasped, my eyes widening to the point where I feared I'd feel them pop out of their orbits. He cocked his head to one side, amused that I'd even asked such a question.
Warlock, remember? The dude probably knows your blood type, too.
Go on, I whispered, suddenly regretful that I'd interrupted him. Questions were good, but too many could deter him from giving me answers I now desperately needed.
I belong to the San Diego Coven, and you need to come in soon and introduce yourself to us,
Wade continued.
Witches and wizards rarely fare well on their own. We require the protection, the privileges, and the rules of a coven in order to survive and to thrive. Whatever answers you need, the coven has them, as long as you pledge your allegiance to us.
Hold on. Allegiance? It was my turn to raise both eyebrows at him. I was just getting used to my independence. There was no way in hell I was getting myself tied down to anyone or anything.
Loyalty. Now that you've been discovered, you cannot hide anymore. I will have to report your existence to the coven,
Wade replied. Can't you pretend that we never met?
Don't you want answers?
Can't you give them to me? I asked, torn between my general wariness of the unknowns presented by a coven's existence and my need to understand myself and my abilities.
You want your cake and you want to eat it, too. Giving nothing in return?
Wade smirked.
That's a tad naive.
So what? I just walk into your magical coven, recite some pledge of allegiance, and poof, I'm yours to do with as you please, I retorted, crossing my arms over my chest. His raised eyebrow made me go over what I just said, and I resisted the urge to smack myself for not thinking prior to speaking. You know what I meant.
I do. But that's not how this works. You have powers, Harley. And with power comes a responsibility, as cheesy as that may sound. The coven doesn't just offer answers. You'll learn more about yourself. They'll teach you how to develop and control your abilities. You'll become part of a family.
I didn't have an answer. Just more questions, a growing pit in my stomach, and the feeling that I could be getting myself into a heap of trouble. Ever since I was a little girl, I had serious issues with authority. I simply could never stand being told what to do and whom to obey. My recent stride into adulthood had been an absolute blessing. I no longer had to get anyone's permission to do whatever I wanted. I followed the rule of law, I paid my taxes, and I kept my abilities to myself because that's what helped me survive. I didn't need a coven telling me what I could and couldn't do. My knee-jerk reaction was to back away and pretend tonight never even happened. And Wade could tell that I was thoroughly undecided. Chances were that it was written all over my face, too.
You don't have to answer right now. Think about it. You have 24 hours, after which I'll be expecting your call.
This guy is unbelievable.
That's your idea of giving me time to think about making a life-changing decision? 24 hours. I'm pretty sure the waiting period for adopting a dog is 7 days, I replied.
You interrupted my capture of a very dangerous creature just now, Wade said, his tone implying much more than his words. You're lucky I'm not hauling you down to the coven right now. Be thankful that I'm giving you a chance to come in by yourself and show good faith.
Interrupted your capture? I asked, struggling to contain my outrage while riding out the waves of frustration that Wade was experiencing. How was I the one frustrating him? That guy was about to be eaten alive by a freaking gargoyle.
And I was there, ready to intervene. There was no need for you to get involved, he insisted, mirroring my pose as he crossed his arms over his chest.
Pardon me for not walking away from a man's cry for help. A taxi pulled up 20 feet ahead on the street corner and honked once, the driver persistently looking at Wade.
He closed his eyes for a second, pressing his lips tight as he carefully chose his next words. Just think about it. And whether your answer will be yes or no, call me. You have 24 hours.
What if I say no?
Harley, just think about it before we continue this conversation, Wade said,
then collected the duffel bag from the back of his Jeep and got in the cab. The engine roared to life, and the car joined the thin traffic stream on the main road, leaving me behind with a ton of questions and no reasonable explanation as to why the parking lot fence had been destroyed.
Crap,
I cursed under my breath, then nervously looked around. There were no cameras covering that corner of the parking lot. I checked my watch. 12:15. I had maybe 5 minutes to get out of here before Malcolm and the others emerged from the casino. I grabbed my keys and clutch from where I'd dropped them and slipped behind the wheel. I got out of there and drove straight home, my hands clutching the wheel so hard my knuckles turned white. It was bad enough that everything I thought I knew about myself had been twisted and reshuffled to the point where I could barely think straight. I was being asked to join a coven I knew nothing about. I just witnessed a monster trying to kill an innocent guy, then the innocent guy getting his memory wiped by a dude whose sheer presence made the air around me feel heavier. The streetlights flickered past me in shades of orange as I stared at the road ahead and wondered what to do. The events of the night kept replaying in my head, and I made mental notes of the key moments. At least I knew what I was. After all these years, I muttered, as I reached my apartment and locked the door behind me. A heavy sigh rolled out of me, and I walked over to the living room area, dropping Wade's business card on the coffee table next to a pile of magazines. As much as I disliked the thought, Wade was right. I could at least think about it before deciding anything. Sleeping on it sounded like a good idea, until my stomach reminded me that I'd barely eaten throughout the day. I headed over to the fridge, where 2 slices of pizza awaited, next to a can of Coke. I scarfed down my leftover dinner while standing in the dark and staring out the windows. What was it that I wanted for myself? Where was my life headed? Most importantly, what could I get out of that coven? And what did they want from me? Chapter 5. I woke up the next day from a variety of absolutely mind-boggling and downright weird nightmares. The strangest creature snuck into my subconscious somehow. From the gargoyle I'd seen the night before, to fiendish beasts with serpent tails, wings, and fangs that seemed eager to tear me to shreds. Big round yellow eyes haunted me wherever I went. Shadows hissed behind me. And whenever I turned around, there was nothing but darkness, until monstrous shapes formed and I ended up running, desperate to save myself. The sun was out, peeking through the wooden blinds of my bedroom windows. I was covered in sweat, my t-shirt drenched and stuck to my skin, shivers running down my spine. My heart rate was accelerated, my breathing uneven, as I tried to remember the ghoulish faces I'd seen in my nightmares. It didn't take long for me to realize that it all had something to do with Wade Crowley and the events I'd witnessed in his presence. The image of that gargoyle hounded me well into breakfast, which consisted of coffee and a couple of slices of toast. Anything else would have made me hurl, as I shuffled around the house in a permanent state of queasiness. My instincts screamed at me to stay away from Wade and the coven, along with whatever pledging allegiance to them entailed. Sure, I was grateful to at least know what I was after all these years, but joining a coven was the last thing I wanted to do right now. I liked my freedom too much, and I'd gone through a lot of crap to get it. I fished my father's note out of my wallet, sipping my coffee as I read it 20 times over. Stay safe, stay smart. Maybe my parents knew something. Maybe my dad wanted me to stay safe from such organizations. I'd seen plenty of witch movies, and I'd read about the Salem witch trials when I was still in high school. Needless to say, the literature on the subject wasn't exactly encouraging. After a couple of hours and a hot shower, I took Wade's business card from the coffee table and tossed it into the trash can. It was all too creepy and unknown, and my stomach seemed to loosen up a little as soon as the card landed on a pile of torn-up pizza boxes. I was better off alone. My phone buzzed with a text, and I glanced at the sender. Ryan Smith. Part of me had expected it to be from Wade, given his stalkerish tendencies, like how he'd known my name. But I was relieved to see my foster sister's name on the screen instead. Her text read, "Coffee at St. Clair's Cafe in 20? I responded with a resounding, "Yes." The distraction would be nice. Plus, I had errands to run near her house, our parents' house, I should say, and I figured it would be a good time to catch up. Not that I could tell her about the whole bucket of weird I'd been dealing with, but she was a familiar, friendly face, and had this way of soothing me like no one else could. When I got to the cafe, Ryan was already there, waiting patiently beneath a signature red awning. Standing one head shorter than me, with long brown hair and gray-blue eyes, she was the all-American sweetheart. Class president and valedictorian with numerous debate trophies and one too many pantsuits for her young age, Ryan had dreams of one day becoming president. Until then, however, she was prepping for a bountiful career in law, followed by a seat in the Senate. The girl was extremely ambitious and was my best link to normalcy on this earth. "Mom's asking if you want to come with us to Maui this summer," Ryan said, smiling as we sat down at one of the small round tables outside. I hadn't seen her in a couple of weeks, but every other weekend, Ryan made her way down to San Diego from UCLA. My heart filled with pride whenever I saw her. Everything she'd set out to accomplish, she did, sooner or later. "1 week, all inclusive. They'll cover the hotel, you just need to pay for your flight," she continued. "I'm thinking fruity drinks, orchid garlands, gorgeous boys on the beach, and of course basking in the sun. You can't say no to that." It'd be stupid of me to refuse. I beamed, deeply touched that Mr. and Mrs. Smith were so keen to spend time with me. Out of all my foster families, the Smiths were the best. Sweet and kind people who loved me like I was their own. Like I was Ryan. I made a mental note to pay them a visit by the end of the month, and bring along a basket of Mrs. Smith's favorite baked goods. If you wanted her on your good side, all you needed were raisin scones and banana walnut bread. "We're thinking end of August," Ryan replied, adding sugar to her latte. "Mom has these wonderful vacation package offers from her travel agent. We had to vote on where to go in the first place. Dad wanted Peru, but Mom and I convinced him to do Maui now, then look at Peru, maybe for next spring." End of August sounds good. I cradled my warm cup of black coffee in my hands, pleased to take in all the positive energies coming from Ryan. She was fond of me, and I could feel it. I wished I could tell her just how wonderful she felt to me, but I'd already decided to keep my abilities a secret from her. Ryan was better off not knowing, for her own safety, in case anyone in a black suit with a badge came after me. I'll have a look at flights as soon as you guys decide on some dates, and I'll pop by the house sometime next week. I owe your mom a major hug. And scones! Ryan chuckled. Wouldn't dream of showing up without some, I replied, and we both laughed lightly. Have you been, anyway? How's college treating you?
You know, it's even harder than I'd anticipated. But hey, pretty sure that's the textbook definition of adulthood.
She grinned, then sighed a little.
It's exhausting. I don't get much time for social stuff, but it's okay. They say the first year is the toughest, just until you get used to the rigor and deadlines. Honestly, I'm loving every bit of it. And I'm so lucky that my parents actually saved up for this. Wish we were there together, though.
She turned sad as she said that, wringing my heart around. I covered her hand with mine and squeezed gently. We both know I'm not law school material, I replied, smiling gently. They'd kick me out of pre-law before the semester was over.
Have you decided, though, I mean, on what you want to do? I understand the whole gap year thing. It's a wise choice and all, but it's already spring. Application deadlines end in July if you're doing rolling admission,
Ryan said, frowning slightly. I could tell she was worried for my future, and I really didn't want to clutter her mind with my inability to make a decision. Frankly, I didn't know what I wanted to do with my life. I had these abilities that forced me to keep a low profile, given the fact that I was still learning to control them. College life didn't sound safe and smart, as my emotions were still quite volatile and had a direct impact on my telekinesis in particular. Not to mention the accidental fires, the sudden earthquakes, and the bathroom floods. Whenever I was distressed, my relationship with the natural elements suffered, and there were only so many excuses I could use before people started looking at me funny. Not yet, I gave her a faded smile. It'll come to me soon enough. I'm stuck between anthropology and law enforcement. It's better than the ideas I had last fall, I guess.
Last fall?
Ryan narrowed her eyes, pursing her lips as she tried to remember.
Ah, yes. Psychology, right?
Yeah, I shrugged.
Honestly, I'm having a hard time finding my place in the world right now.
I might take another gap year, but I'll make up my mind eventually.
Well, you are ridiculously good at reading people, she said. Whatever you go for, just make sure you get to make use of that skill, and that it involves quality footwear.
I burst into laughter. She reminded me of her mom. Mrs. Smith had this hilarious way of practical thinking where career choices were involved. Don't become a firefighter unless you're used to 40 pounds of equipment weighing you down at all times. Don't become a mail carrier if you don't like dogs. Don't become a chef if you don't like hairnets.
I don't know. I think I'll do all right in a uniform, I replied. San Diego does welcome decent people on its force. I'm sure you'd make a great cop if you decide to go there,
Ryan said, filling me with her familiarly warm affection. Man, the faith this girl had in me was almost impossible to quantify.
I'm just happy you ended up with us when you did. I know the foster system doesn't give you many chances and that people somehow look down on kids like you. I plan to change that when I get into office.
Leave it to Ryan Smith to try to change the world. I'd considered multiple career choices over the past few months. My empathy skills were out of this world, so I knew I'd have a leg up in any fields related to law enforcement or psychology. Reading people was basically already paying for my rent and food. Why not turn it into a bona fide career? I liked it enough, even when some emotions were too strong to handle. I did get a kick out of unmasking cheats and thieves at the casino, after all. I wanted to ask her for advice about my encounter with Wade and his request for me to join the coven, but I couldn't exactly tell her the whole truth. Some omissions were necessary.
Ryan, I wanted to ask you something, I said,
and she raised her eyebrows in response, letting me know I had her full attention. I'm just curious. I was watching this movie the other night, and it got me thinking. What would you do if, say, you had these, call them superpowers,
And someone who also had superpowers came to you and told you to join their organization, out of the blue. You don't know them, you don't know what they do, what they represent, but everything you know about these superpowers isn't very positive. And people like you have gotten hurt in the past whenever they went out in public. Brian blinked a couple of times, then giggled. Have you been binging fantasy TV shows again? Lord, if there's one way to keep you indoors for days on end, it's to get you a streaming service. Yeah, I know, I chuckled. But just, you know, just humor me, would you? Would I what? Would you say yes? Would you join the organization? Not without knowing what they do, she replied, shaking her head slowly. I mean, who are they? What does their logo look like? Honestly, if the logo has snakes or spiders on it, it's a clear sign to just say no. Every comic book will tell you the same. And another thing that counts at this point is what kind of superpowers do you have and what do you use them for? Are you a solo vigilante or do you want to be part of a league of legends or whatever? I couldn't help but raise an eyebrow at her, slightly amused. Wow, and I'm the fantasy fanatic, huh? Brianne laughed, throwing her head back for extra flair, then took my hand in hers. I got it all from you. Remember the moment you walked into our home, Harley? Remember what was in your black bag? A lump formed in my throat as I remembered the look on her face when I first arrived at the Smiths. She was so eager to get to know me better. All I had were the clothes on my back, scars from my previous families, and a black bag with more clothes, shoes, and several comic books I'd been carrying for years. How far I'd come, thanks to Ryan and her parents. I nodded, finding it hard to reply as tears threatened to work their way to my eyes. It was always so good to see her. Whenever I felt lost, Ryan had this way of bringing me back, most of the time without even knowing what I was going through. In the end, Harley, I think you just do what feels right, Ryan added. Your instincts are never wrong, are they? I smiled. No. No, they aren't. She was right. My instincts were still in survival mode, and I had to pay attention to them. As soon as I got back home and walked through the door, I felt as though I'd made the right decision by not following up with Wade Crowley. Besides, his air of superiority and arrogance kind of irked me. All the more reason not to... Weird? I murmured as I reached the coffee table. My stomach churned at the sight of Wade's business card, which was back on top of my magazine stack. I checked the trash can, then stared at the card for a long moment. Wade's name glimmered gold, along with his phone number and San Diego Coven, making me retrace my steps prior to leaving the house. I swear I threw this out. I turned the card over and noticed the symbol on the back. With all the madness from last night, I hadn't even properly checked for other details. The Coven's logo was interesting, to say the least. It was a stylized Ouroboros, the ancient image of a snake eating its tail. Needless to say, that amped up the creepy factor to 11. Muttering to myself, I ripped the card up and tossed it back in the bin. The more I looked at it, the more annoyed I got. I really didn't like being told what to do. Unfortunately, the universe had other plans for me, as it so eloquently convinced me over what quickly became the three weirdest days of my life. I tried to get on with things. My mornings were usually reserved for long walks with a home-brewed coffee or a hazelnut latte if I was craving a special treat. The day after my meeting with Ryan, I went out for my aforementioned morning routine after taking out the trash, Wade's shredded card included. In need of a clear head, I took the long route around the neighborhood, gazing at the new spring-summer collections on display in fashion stores. A gorgeous leather jacket caught my eye, so I stepped closer to the window to see the stitching details on the sleeves. I didn't spot it initially, but there was a card in the window glass, just to the right of where I was facing it. Leaning over, I noticed the details, and froze. It was Wade's business card, with the same embossed gold lettering, his number and organization name just below. What in the world? I muttered, then touched the glass.
It was in there. In the freaking window. It wasn't glued or taped to it. It was in the glass. I gasped, then glanced around as if expecting to see Wade somewhere nearby. "Excuse me," I said to a lady passing by. She stopped to look at me, and I pointed at the window. "Can you see that?"
"See what?"
she asked. The card in the window.
"What card?"
I looked at the window again, and the card was still very much there. Something clicked in my head, and I instantly understood that it was just for me to see, and no one else. The dude's a warlock, after all, and he's basically trolling me.
Never mind.
I shook my head as the lady walked away. "Sorry." I stared at the card for a while, trying to figure out how Wade had pulled this off. Did he know I'd be walking past that specific store at that specific time? Had he followed me? After a couple of deep breaths, I decided not to let him get to me. If this was his way of trying to capture my attention, I was sure as hell not going to give him the satisfaction of knowing it had worked. I resumed my walk past other stores, but my temperature spiked as I spotted the card again in other windows. It was everywhere, its golden letters quietly glimmering in the morning sunlight. I walked faster, heart thudding as I turned the corner and came to a sudden halt. Every single window down the block had one of Wade's cards in it, and I was the only one who could see them. "That just makes me want to get as far away from you creeps as possible," I breathed, ignoring the shop windows entirely. I resisted the urge to call Ryan just so I could get my fix of tranquility. She was probably busy making her way back to UCLA anyway. Instead, I went home and enjoyed the rest of my day off with a solid TV binge about teenage vampires in Pennsylvania. On day two, I didn't even leave the house. After a full breakfast and two coffees, I settled on the sofa and turned on my TV, hoping I'd get my mind off things. The more creeped out I got, the more determined I was not to give in. Who the hell was Wade Crowley to tell me what I should do with my life anyway? After just 20 minutes of pretending to watch a vampire flick, I flipped open my laptop and started searching the internet for anything related to witches, warlocks, and covens. Nothing popped up for the San Diego coven, of course, other than a message board for Wiccan practitioners, but they were completely harmless 15-year-olds with way too much free time on their hands. They riddled their posts with winking and heart-shaped emojis and lots of X's and O's. I'd gone through the motions before, as far as internet research into witchcraft was concerned, but I didn't have as much information then as I did now, though the difference wasn't exactly staggering. The Wade Crowley I'd met wasn't on any of the social networks, nor did I find any of his pictures online. But when I started looking for ways to ward off magic, the search engine was overloaded with all kinds of websites. After some light browsing, I noticed some recurring patterns in the recommendations, lining the doors and windows with salt to ward off evil spirits and dark magic. "Might as well," I muttered, then grabbed the salt shaker from the kitchen and lined the door and windows as per online instructions. I ordered a large pizza and was careful not to disrupt the salt line when the delivery boy brought it over. Armed with a can of chilled Coke and a gorgeous cheese pizza just for me and my ragged nerves, I switched to a romantic drama, putting my feet up on the coffee table. I inhaled the first two slices as I absently watched the main character, a blonde-haired heroine with perfect natural makeup, awkwardly ask her love interest out on a date. Oh, the bravery, according to her goofy best friend. Ugh. Something didn't taste right where my third slice was concerned. The more I chewed, the worse the texture became. It tasted almost like paper. "What the?" I mumbled, then looked down and nearly choked. I sat up straight and used both hands to tear the pizza slice in two. Right in the middle, nestled between melted strings of mozzarella cheese, was Wade Crowley's business card. Well, half of it, anyway. I stared at it, unable to register the reality of what was going on. "Seriously, this is some messed up..."
I bit my tongue, then dumped the pizza pieces on top of the rest before washing the taste of paper down with Coke. I was equal parts angry and creeped out, wondering how much farther Wade would take things if I didn't call him. I had no idea what to do. Move to another city, maybe? Los Angeles or San Francisco could work. I'd always wanted to see more of my country anyway. Why not start now? But maybe Wade wasn't going to stop. Maybe the coven was going to come after me in the end. Jeez, listen to yourself. I groaned, leaning back into my sofa, just as the guy on TV kissed the girl for the first time. I waited for my heart to flutter, as it usually did with kissing scenes, but nothing happened. My mind was stuck on Wade and his stupid magic tricks. Why was I letting him drive me out of town? I'd survived childhood in the foster care of some truly horrible people. There was no way I was letting that jerk scare me out of my own city. Hell no. On day 3, I was still significantly on edge. I had a shift at the casino, which I hoped would help keep me focused on something other than that wretched business card. The night started out smoothly, and I'd settled at a blackjack table, waiting to see if anyone was counting cards without the dealer noticing. The players were all excited, and my blood was pumping with the thrill of gamblers. Knowing the downfalls of such a road, I could only feel sorry for them. Chances were they'd be walking out poorer than they'd come in. "Yeah, so I called him yesterday," a young woman told her male friend at the table, laughing as they clinked glasses, and the dealer flipped another card. And he was like, "Who's this?"
"No. You're serious?"
The guy seemed shocked and amused at the same time. Judging by the ache in the girl's heart, though, the laughter was just for show.
"Yeah,"
she giggled.
"He deleted my number. What a jerk, right?"
"Absolutely. You're much better off without him."
"Right? That's what I thought."
She nodded, as if feeding off her friend's encouragement. I could feel the hope inside her that maybe tomorrow would hurt less than today.
"Wade Crowley?"
a waitress asked as she stopped by our table.
"Wait, what?"
I replied, not sure I'd registered the question.
"Wade Crowley, 555-2315, San Diego Coven,"
the waitress said, eyebrows raised. I blinked several times, then looked around and laughed nervously.
"Sorry, I didn't catch what you said." "Wade Crowley,"
the broken-hearted girl repeated, frowning at me.
555-2315, the guy next to her added.
"Have you lost your minds?" I croaked, unsure of what was going on, since they were looking at me as if I were the crazy one.
"San Diego Coven,"
added the dealer. "This is freaking me out, man," I managed, jumping to my feet and stepping away from the table, as all the players, the dealer and the waitress, gawked at me.
"Wade Crowley?"
Malcolm came to my side, visibly concerned.
"What is this?"
Malcolm put his hand on my shoulder, squeezing gently as if to calm me down.
555-2315. San Diego Coven. Wade Crowley.
But the words coming out of his mouth had nothing to do with my panic attack. I was close to hyperventilating at this point, wheezing and breathing heavily as my heart kicked around in my chest.
"Wade Crowley?"
the waitress asked from behind.
"Oh, for crap's sake," I blurted out, and took several steps back as more people turned their heads to look at me. "Can you not hear yourselves?"
"Wade Crowley, 555-2315, San Diego Coven. Wade Crowley,"
Malcolm said gently, trying to come closer.
"No way. I'm out of here,"
I growled, then ran out of the casino. The night was chilly as I rushed straight across the parking lot to my car.
"Wade Crowley?"
a young man asked as he passed by me and gave me a seductive wink.
"Go to hell,"
I shot back and darted to my Daisy, my heels clicking frantically across the asphalt. I got in my car and turned the key in the ignition, my fingers trembling and slick with sweat.
"This is too much,"
I murmured, my eyes stinging with tears. The Mustang grumbled as its engine set it into motion, and I drove out into the main street, leaving skid marks behind. I flipped the radio switch on and turned the volume up, drowning in guitar riffs of alternative rock music.
I needed all the noise I could get to drown out the echoes of what just happened. My favorite song came on, but it sounded weird.
"You've got to be kidding me,"
I breathed, as I realized that the lyrics were also reciting Wade Crowley's name, phone number, and organization.
"You son of a... That's my favorite song, and you freaking ruined it!" I shouted, then turned the radio off.
I ran a red light, but didn't get stopped by any traffic cops on my way home. Like I even care at this point. What were my options? Clearly, Wade's reach was far wider than I'd initially thought. His powers were fearsome, to say the least. I mean, if he could do all that with just a business card, what were the odds that I could keep living in San Diego undisturbed? Judging by the last few days, obviously zero. I had two choices, from what I could tell. Call Wade, or get out of San Diego. When I got home, I threw all my stuff on the floor and took out my phone, jabbing my finger at the screen. With all the times I'd seen the business card, I'd memorized his number already. The line rang, and I did my best to keep a calm and composed voice. I couldn't let Wade know he'd reached the edge of my patience. My honor demanded that I keep my cool.
"Took you a while,"
Wade said from the other end of the phone, his voice smooth and low.
"What the hell are you trying to do?"
I shouted. There goes my self-control.
"I take it you got my message,"
he replied dryly. "I will kick him in the nuts, I swear." I took a deep breath, then closed my eyes for a couple of seconds.
"More than once. You're quite persistent," I retorted.
"Well, you're stubborn,"
he shot back.
"Be here at noon tomorrow."
"Wait, beware it."
He hung up on me. I exhaled, lingering somewhere between a fit of rage and a bout of hysterical laughter. He was deliberately messing with me, and I'd already given him too much satisfaction.
"Fine,"
I shook my head slowly.
"I'll come see you then."
"But where?" The guy was so arrogant and self-assured he'd forgotten to give me an address. It wasn't as if one could simply find the San Diego Coven on an online map. I'd already tried that. I tossed and turned throughout the night, barely catching a couple of hours worth of sleep. And as soon as I woke up, reality came back to smack me over the head. I sighed, then got out of bed, eager to hit the shower. Hopefully Wade was going to call back with an address. Otherwise I'd have to do the most unpleasant thing I could think of at the moment. Call him again. Shivers rushed through me, and I shuddered as I walked toward the bathroom. I glanced down and yelped, jumping back a couple of feet.
"You crazy, crazy, crazy jerk!"
On the floor, at the foot of my bed, were spilled coffee beans, carefully arranged into a string of letters, big enough for me not to miss them. My shoulders dropped as I reached a rather unpleasant conclusion. There was no way out until I went to see Wade Crowley. The letters on the floor were clear as far as my destination was concerned. Fleet Science Center. At least he gave me an address. Chapter 6. A few hours later, still hopped up on caffeine and plenty of frustration, I drove up Park Boulevard to Fleet Science Center. I wasn't sure what I was doing there just yet, but I figured I'd meet Wade somewhere inside. So I parked my Daisy out front, then went around the building. Balboa Park wasn't all that busy at noon, with only a few parents and their kids out and about. It was a school day, after all. The circular fountain caught my eye as water gushed out, its murmurs soothing my nerves. I walked through the main entrance and stopped by the reception desk, where two young ladies flashed me bright smiles, their name tags telling me everything I needed to know. Several school groups were touring the center, the noise of children squealing and laughing prompting me to raise my voice to make sure Ellen and Jane could hear me behind their desks.
"Hi, I'm here to see Wade Crowley," I said, mirroring their sunny dispositions.
Ellen nodded, then checked her computer screen, typing in Wade's name. She frowned slightly, then looked up at me.
"I'm sorry, there's no one here by that name,"
Ellen replied.
Are you here for the archive and library job openings?
No, I said, blinking several times.
He told me to meet him here.
Sort of. Hold on. I pulled my phone from my jacket pocket, suddenly feeling a little out of place as I noticed the plethora of crisp white school shirts and neat black jackets worn by the Science Center employees. My tight jeans and leather boots and jacket didn't help me fit in much. I went through my call history and tapped on Wade's number, which was disconnected. Son of a... My frustration was rearing its ugly head once more, and I stifled a curse to spare the nearby kids my foul mood, while Ellen and Jane offered a pair of awkward smiles in return.
You're late.
Wade's voice startled me. I turned around, then stilled at the sight of him an inch too close for my comfort. No, I'm not. You said noon, I shot back.
You're 3 days late.
He kept his calm demeanor, though his voice cut through me like a knife. It was his intention to make me feel guilty, and though I'd never tell him, he was succeeding in making me regret delaying the visit. I could have avoided all the weirdness with his magic tricks had I simply called him the next day. Then again, hindsight was always 20/20. I didn't commit to anything from what I remember, I said, crossing my arms. I wasn't going to give in, and judging by his emotions echoing through me, he seemed to like that. The man was a walking contradiction, clearly.
You'll learn soon enough what the rules are, he replied. Anyway, you'll have to forgive Ellen and Jane. They're both new here. The center is going through a restructuring of sorts, and they've just joined our team.
He gave them a polite nod, and they both blushed and fluttered their eyelashes at him in response. I resisted the urge to roll my eyes, by then well aware that Wade was eye candy to these girls. Ellen gasped, then covered her mouth with her hands.
I'm so sorry, she replied, as if suddenly remembering who he was. You're from the archive and library department, aren't you?
Mm-hmm, Wade confirmed.
I'll take it from here, ladies. Thanks.
He motioned for me to follow him. We left the reception desk and headed through the main hall. I glanced at the wall-mounted signs, and based on the right and left turns we took, we were walking toward Kid City, the museum area dedicated to children under the age of 5. So what's up with that weirdo card trick? I asked, stuffing my hands in my jacket pockets. My gaze wandered around, occasionally settling on framed photographs of various space missions. The moonshots were particularly fascinating, dramatic black and white contrasts reminding me of how tiny we were, how insignificant our world was when compared to the rest of the universe.
I think it deserves a bit more appreciation than that, Wade said. It does require a certain amount of skill to pull off.
Is that how you get girls to come see you? The sideways glance he gave me was a warning sign. Not that I took it seriously. After what he put me through, he was going to put up with this and more. Wade Crowley wasn't going to be the one to knock me down, and I sure as heck didn't want him to even get the opportunity to try. It was what I'd learned to do whenever I was brought into a new foster home with more than one kid already on the premises. You acted tough. You held your ground. You showed them you couldn't be intimidated. Otherwise, they trampled you worse than a herd of panicked elephants. What am I doing here, Wade? I asked, noticing the Kid City sign ahead in big, colorful letters just above the entrance.
I thought I made that perfectly clear the other night, he replied, looking ahead. You're a witch, and the coven wants to meet you.
In Kid City. The room was built to resemble an actual city, with building cutouts and a pretend road stickered onto the floor. There were plenty of kids crawling around, too. I counted at least 3 who seemed to enjoy chewing on plastic scenery. The others were busy running around and giggling, playing with huge toy blocks and riding the red fire truck on the side of the road. I could tell Wade was a bit embarrassed as we followed the cute little highway, dodging rogue toddlers while the parents watched from the sides. Before I could further tease him about his presence here, all the childish emotions from Kid City rammed into me with unexpected force. All of a sudden, I was 5 kinds of excited, but also amused and angry. I glanced over my shoulder and noticed 2 kids fighting over a seat at one of the computers. They both wanted to play and had little respect for the wait-your-turn policy. I felt it all. And it was a little too much. Children were way more intense than adults. Their emotions were raw and amplified, often cutting my breath short. I started walking faster.